chance of showers into the afternoon.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are talking with a gentleman today who lived through a harrowing experience in back in 1967. An act of war is how I would describe it. I believe the commander that I'm speaking to right now would also consider that an act of war. Commander, I'm not trying to speak for you, but would you consider that an act of war?
I totally agree.
Okay. And the simple truth of the matter is, you attempted, maybe not you personally, but your shipmates tried to communicate this attack, and they were being jammed, weren't they?
Yes, as soon as the attack started, we started radioing to Sixth Fleet and USS America and other American forces that we were under attack and needed immediate assistance. Of course, that's one of the remarkable things about this whole business. We immediately got a reply back from the USS America. Saratoga, which was with USS America, 300 miles away, and they assured us help is on the way, and they started launching airplanes. And for reasons that we have never been able to figure out, the White House immediately ordered those airplanes recalled. So I've talked to several of the pilots that were on their way to help us when they got orders to return to the ship, and they knew that our ship was still under attack. But they had to turn around and abandon us. Captain Tully of the Saratoga told me that he could hear, he was connected by radio with our radio men, and the radio was patched up to the bridge. He could hear the radio men calling for help and missiles, rockets exploding in the background. And still, the airplanes that he had sent to help us were ordered to abandon us.
Well, you know something, Commander, a lot of people listening right now don't know what it's like to be on board ship. I do, and you do as well. It's not a place, it's a lot of friends, a lot of tight relationships, a small space, and you're out there. If nobody's coming to help you, you're on your own in that situation. And these guys had overwhelming firepower. You were not a ship of war per se. I mean, you were a naval vessel, but you certainly didn't have the means to really protect yourself, did you?
Not at all. I mean, we had four miserable little 50 caliber machine guns and against really powerful jets and motor torpedo boats carrying 1,000-pound bombs. I mean, we're in no position at all to defend ourselves.
Well, these guys turned out to be the group that couldn't shoot straight, apparently, because they misused their firepower and didn't sink the ship. And so finally, they did believe, from what I understand, when you got some messages out, and they found out possibly that some ships, some aircraft were launched to come to your aid. Apparently, they didn't know if those airplanes had been recalled or not, so they... Did they continue their attack after the Saratoga informed you that they were sending aircraft, or was their attack curtailed at that point? I mean, when did they stop, and in your estimation, why did they stop?
They appear to have stopped only because they heard our call for help get out, and the American Saratoga tell us that help was on the way, and they had no way of knowing that help was not really on the way.
Well, then that's what's saved the day. Now,
right.
when these guys, did they return to their bases and leave you guys just floating there to try and put yourselves back together? Or did they stay in the vicinity did they move off to the distance, or did they go all the way back to their base?
Well, to get the picture, the attack started at 2 o'clock.
Yep.
At 3:15, they were still circling us, taking occasional pot shots at whatever moved, and we were taking on more and more water. And we had a heavy list. We had a 40-foot hole in the side, and the captain ordered prepare to abandon ship. So we launched three life rafts over the side. We're the only ones that would stay afloat. They machine gunned the life rafts in the water, which is a war crime by any estimation. Took one of them aboard, and at that point, 3:15, 75 minutes after it all started, they took that life raft aboard and headed back toward Tel Aviv.
So now you I would have imagined that you stayed in general quarters, so you were maintaining watertight integrity. So your ship was only listing and not sinking.
Luckily, yes. Fortunately, the torpedo hit the intelligence spaces, which were sealed off from other parts of the ship, so there were no watertight doors on that level between the flooded space and the next space, so we had even that much more protection.
Well, that's fortunate of design. And when you did your assessment, how many people ultimately were killed on that in that first instance?
9 died from the air attack. 25 more died from the torpedo, and ultimately 174 of the 297 or so man crew were wounded.
That's really difficult for me to swallow, Commander. You know, I told you privately, I'm a disabled vet as well, and a disabled sailor, and I know well what this is like. And I got to tell the listeners right now, this is not the act of a friend. It's not the act of an ally. It is not the act of a moral nation. Anyone that would shoot a life raft going into the water is a murderous war criminal, and there's no other way to put it. The simple truth of the matter is now, once you limped, what happened now? Was the captain still intact? Was he still in command? Or was he injured? What was up with the captain?
He was injured. He lost a lot of blood, and he stayed on his feet throughout the attack and eventually lay down on deck on the wing of the bridge and continued to give orders from that position. He stayed on the bridge all night long. Meanwhile, we were getting establishing communications with the rest of the Navy, and almost the first thing we received was information telling us that this was not to be talked about. It was amazing how the whole thing was controlled. Admiral Kidd.
Was Admiral Kidd the task force commander?
Pardon?
Was Admiral Kidd your task force commander?
No, he was a rear admiral that was on another command in the Mediterranean, and he was brought out simply to hold the court of inquiry under the direction of Admiral McCain, who was the chief and staff or commander in chief of Naval Forces Europe.
And that would be John McCain Sr., the father of John McCain, the United States Senator. Am I correct?
Exactly. And that appears to be one reason we have gotten nothing but a cold shoulder from John McCain Jr. He just won't talk to us about this.
Yeah, well, there are other reasons that I've shared with you, and I'm going to share with my listeners as well why this man has done such a thing. But let's go on further. Were you able to steam? Did you lose your capacity to steam out of the area?
We lost our engines and electrical power for several minutes, and were able to get those back slowly.
Well,
we headed back toward Malta.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we return, we're going to continue the story. This is going to be a complete examination today. There's a lot of facts that we're leaving out, but you're going to have a very good idea of just what happened and what took place in this horrible event, this act of war, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back on The French Connection. And, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We've been speaking with Lieutenant Commander Jim Ennis, retired U.S. Navy, about his horrible experience on the USS Liberty back in 1967 when the nation of Israel committed an act of war against the United States, murdering 34 sailors and injuring well over 100 of them. And we've got a caller that'd like to ask you a question, Commander. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Mike from Arizona, you're on with the commander.
Yes. Hi, Commander Ennis.
Hi.
You have the distinction of being one of the heroes in a story that makes us all ashamed to be Americans. But I want to ask you two things. Did your communications people have capability of understanding Hebrew so that they knew for sure that your ship had been identified?
That's an interesting question. We did not have a Hebrew linguist aboard. We happened to have one man who understood Hebrew because he learned it as a hobby. And so we had some ability to understand what the pilots were saying, yes.
Oh, okay. They did communicate with each other in Hebrew rather than English?
Yes, they did.
Okay. The other question is, I have to believe that one of your brothers in arms would have let you know if the Pentagon had concocted this plan. Do you know at this point whether the idea for this attack came from Israel or came from the geniuses at the Pentagon?
I've never seen any indication that there was any connivance or real foreknowledge by the Pentagon. No.
That's been
suggested many times, but I haven't seen anything to prove that.
So when Johnson and McNamara ordered the Saratoga to stand down, they were just following the Israelis' lead?
I've been trying to find out for 40 years why they ordered the rescue effort to stop. They won't talk about that. That's one of the mysteries, and that's one of the reasons that this whole thing deserves a serious investigation, but this remains the only serious maritime incident in American history that's never been investigated.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Operation Northwood?
I've heard it. I'm not familiar with it, no.
This was a plan that actually got the approval of General Lemnitzer at the Pentagon. I mean, it went about as high as it could before it got shot down by Kennedy himself. It was a plan to attack American bases, dress up Cuban exiles as Cuban regulars, attack our bases, our Marine base, and set off bombs in American cities, hijack American airliners, and try to blame it on Cuba to give us a pretext to get into a war with Cuba. And
had somebody learning from the Levant affair, huh?
Well, that's what we were going to talk about in a little while there, Michael, the Levant affair. It all kind of fits together, doesn't it? And then it kind of leads up to present-day stuff, doesn't it? Modus means and opportunity. Thanks, Mike, for those questions. They're very pointed, and I appreciate them. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go right back to the commander here on this. So you limped into Malta. You were immediately aware that they wanted to squash this story. And then did you receive any visits from Admiral Kidd?
The ship did. Admiral Kidd boarded the ship at sea en route to Malta in the middle of the night, and then stayed aboard for several days while he held a court of inquiry. Meanwhile, a point that's worth noting is that Israel immediately sent the United States an apology of sorts for the attack. It's interesting that the torpedo boats were told by radio immediately after the attack to go back there after they realized who it was. They were told to return to the ship and offer help, but do not apologize. So they didn't apologize. They came alongside and they said, "Do you need help?" Then the Israelis, within hours and a couple more times in the next few days, prepared ever more elaborate excuses for what it was. And they came up with a totally false story of what happened that we have been trying to correct ever since. They told the United States, and this is all on my website, usslibertynow.org, they reported to the United States that they spotted this ship, which they thought was Egyptian, near the coast where they claimed someone was firing on the coast, so we must have been an enemy. Nobody was firing on the coast. They said that they measured our speed and determined we were moving at 30 knots, so we must be a warship. Our top speed was about 18 knots with the governors off.
Yeah, that's full forward. That's nothing. You get you no way. Not a
yeah.
chance at 30.
That's right. But they claimed they thought we were going 30, so we had to be an enemy. That they tried to catch us, but we were going too fast. You know, here we were 18 knots top speed. We're actually moving 5 knots, but they claimed they couldn't catch us, so they called in the aircraft. Then they thought we were an Egyptian cattle boat called, it was really an Egyptian horse transport called El Quasar, and they looked us up in Janes and identified us as El Quasar, because they say we looked something like that. We didn't look anything like that. Then they say they fired a torpedo, but what do you know? As soon as the torpedo hit the water, they say, oh, it's an American ship. There's a flag. And so they stopped firing and immediately came alongside and offered help. Well, that didn't happen either. They continued firing for another 40 minutes after that torpedo explosion from close range, and we've been telling our own government ever since that, hey, they didn't stop firing at 2:35 after the torpedo. They machine gunned our life rafts at 3:15 and then left. But nobody will listen to us. The Congress won't even take our testimony.
Commander, I'm listening, and so are a lot of people right now are listening. And more than 10 or 15,000 people will hear this story soon. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to move to now is the next level of this deception. Admiral Kidd, from what I understand, actually removed his brass and his insignias and everything and stood in front of everybody kind of off the record and told everybody that this was not to be shared outside of that group with anybody. Is that not true, or did I hear wrong?
No, that's totally true. In fact, that was his custom, to establish a little closer rapport, I guess, with the men in the Navy. He would frequently remove his stars and sit down and say, hey, my stars are off. I'm just one of the guys. Tell me what really happened. So he gathered together a dozen or so at a time of our people, stars off.
Well, here's the thing. You know, here's the thing. He knew what happened he knows what they said was a lie, and he covered up a lie. So
his orders were to cover it up.
Yeah, that's right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we've got more to this story. You don't go anywhere. This French Connection is really connecting the dots today. Be right back.
But in your eyes, baby, do I feel high.
And ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We are back. We are back up. We're going to go right back to my guest, Jim Ennis, Lieutenant Commander, retired United States Navy. Jim, you got into port, blimped into port after getting some temporary repairs done, but that whole trip back, virtually no one came to escort you, did they?
Yeah, we had a destroyer and a fleet tug that escorted us back.
You did.
To Malta.
Well, they must have been their jaws must have hit their chest when they saw the mess that this the ship had become.
They were. I frequently hear from some of the people on those ships, and they were astounded.
Where'd they medevac you off to? Up at Longstuhl Second General?
Initially, yes. I was picked up by Hilo and taken over to the USS America, where I stayed for a couple of days, and then a COD flight from America to eventually to Longstuhl, and a few more days there, and then back home.
We might have laid in the same room there, Commander. Could be. I laid in Longstuhl for a long time. In fact, you know, here's the thing. We've got these folks pretty much dead to rights as far as their lies about it, what they were doing that day. What is your speculation as to why they did this? You know, the conventional wisdom is that they wanted to create a situation that made it look like Egypt was involved in an attack on your ship, and to bring America in against Israel, against Egypt. Is that a good guess in your estimation?
That's frequently presented. I'm not really personally persuaded by that. I think they were doing something that they did not want the United States to know about, and there are a number of things. It could have been the planned invasion of the Golan Heights, which the United States was urging them not to do, and if you remember 12 years earlier, they were headed toward capturing the canal and were forced back by American pressure. Here they were about to capture Golan, and I think if the United States had known for sure that was going on, they would have been forced. But there was another thing they were doing just off the coast from where the Liberty was, and we were off 12 miles from El Arish, and at the El Arish airport, they were in the process of executing up to 1,000 Egyptian prisoner of war and dropping their bodies into ditches in the sand.
You mean they were murdering prisoners of war?
Another extreme war crime. They were forcing these Egyptian soldiers to dig their own graves, jump in, and then they'd machine gun them, and the next guy would have to come up, fill up that hole, and dig one for himself.
That's reminiscent of the people they charged that did that to them, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's move on to another subject here. When you guys disbanded as Ship's Company, in other words, you're in Longstuhl, did the XO survive, or did he die in the attack, your XO?
He died 3 or 4 hours after the attack.
So you've lost your XO, you've got an injured captain, he's in a hospital. I mean, everybody's getting all fanned out everywhere. Did they send a message to you at Longstuhl to keep your mouth shut about what happened?
The first message I got was after I got back to the Naval Hospital in Virginia. I had a visit from a Navy captain who told me that if I ever talked about this, I would go to jail. In fact, just all the men who stayed aboard were told by Admiral Kidd in these little group sessions, he'd take his stars off, then he'd put his stars back on, and he'd say, okay, if you ever repeat the stories you have just told me, you will go to jail forever, and we'll throw away the key. Men who were transferred to hospitals had similar visits, usually from Navy captains who came out and gave them the same message as they did me.
That was treason.
Yep.
That's treason. So now we've got admirals committing treason. We've got Israel committing an act of war against the United States. How this all developed and what since 1967? How long did it take before you guys began come together once again and start demanding this be looked at once again? When has this started? Is this in the last 5 or 6 years?
Oh, no. I started, despite the instructions and threats of jail, within a few days of the attack, while I was still in the hospital, I started writing my book and gathering information and interviewing my shipmates and piecing it all together. And I did that over the next 11 years until I retired from the Navy in 1978, contacted Random House, and immediately had a call from the vice president for editorial offering to publish the book. I expected a serious visit with some guys in suits and handcuffs, which fortunately didn't come. Instead, to my astonishment, I got a call from Admiral Tom Moore, who had recently retired as Chief of Naval Operations and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, giving me an attaboy. And he arranged to have the book reviewed by the Naval Institute, and things took off. Then People Magazine sent their editor-in-chief out to spend a week with me, and they did a two-page spread, which, just as the book was being released by Aunt Random House, which helped enormously, but despite all these good things, which would ordinarily have made it into a bestseller, there was also pressure against Random House, who some forces didn't like it being reviewed.
Can you identify those forces?
There was a lot of pro-Israel influence.
Can I name them the way I see them? I call them Zionists.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the Zionist cabal, you know, in America is all powerful. Yeah. In fact, they're powerful around the world. Here's the next thing that I'd like to discuss with you, Commander. We've got families who've grown up without parents and without a father, without a brother or without a son. We've got people like yourself still living with painful injuries, and as you know, I've discovered in my getting older that those injuries I received as a young man are coming back and haunting me in ways I could not have imagined earlier. The fact is, this is not something that has gone away, and I want justice. And how are we going to get justice for this? When we come back, I want you to address how you think we can get justice for this act. And ladies and gentlemen, when we return, we've got more from the Commander Jim Ennis from the USS Liberty. Back. I want to go right back to my guest, Lieutenant Commander Jim Ennis. Jim, you know, there is no justice for the lost lives here. There's no satisfaction, not in my reckoning.
No.
And for the most part, America has absolutely no clue that this country attacked our nation in an act of war. And in fact, that we had treason committed against our public by our own government on behalf of Zionists. And I want to know, how are we going to get justice for this act and many others that have taken place? Levon affair is one. How about 9/11, even, Commander?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are we going to do about this, Jim?
One of the things we have felt would actually open the door and turn a corner is the fact that it is a war crime. We have established beyond question that it was a war crime. There's an American law and international treaty that requires the United States to investigate all allegations of war crimes by or against Americans. So all you have to do, and the agent for that investigation is the Secretary of the Army. So all that is required by law is inform the Secretary of the Army that a war crime has occurred, and by God, he is required by law to investigate.
But because he's, look, most of the top brass in the military, and Admiral McCain's a good example, Admiral Kidd is another good example, these people are bought and paid for by these criminals. And the simple truth is, they will whitewash any investigation that is sent out. So, I mean, look, they allowed a treasonous act to be committed by our government, and they allowed a nation to commit a war, an act of war against us, and go unanswered. So these people are not to be trusted with any investigation, in my estimation.
Well, that's true. We have long feared that if there were an open investigation, it would be tilted. But if there were an open public investigation, as it should be, we could at least get the story on the public record. And consider, for instance, that, you know, we're not just a bunch of nuts crying in the wilderness. We've got people on our side. They're dropping dead like flies. But we have had support over the years from the directors of all of the intelligence agencies, the CIA director, the NSA director, the Secretary of State, almost everybody but the Secretary of Defense has come forward to say, hey, that's true, that was deliberate, you guys are telling the truth. And even with that support, we haven't been able to make any progress.
Well, what explains that? Do you believe that the money that we send to Israel in the form of supporting that country is returned to America to buy up our Congress and Senate so that these investigations never get any traction?
I believe it absolutely, yes. It's obvious that something like that is happening.
Yes. Yeah. And so what we've got is a Washington so sick and so diseased that unless and until we can get rid of these cockroaches that we call our political leaders, I don't see any justice going to be received by anybody who was injured or murdered in that situation. How do you feel?
Well, yeah, but here we are. We've got a very, very carefully prepared by a law firm, 300-page report of a war crime, all of the evidence of why it should be investigated. We delivered it to the Secretary of the Army with a copy to the Secretary of the Navy. It was hand-delivered, get this, by retired Rear Admiral Merlin Starring, who's a former judge advocate general of the Navy. He's the senior legal officer in the Navy.
So he's the top jag man in the whole place.
The Secretary of the Navy and the Army.
Oh, boy. And what happened?
Still, we gave it to them also by certified mail June 8th last, the 38th, I think, anniversary of the attack. And they have done absolutely nothing. They're required by law to investigate, and they haven't even acknowledged receipt.
So,
Admiral Starring has made repeated visits to the Pentagon, personally calling on the top brass. I mean, here's the senior legal officer of the Navy, former, retired, personally calling on the top brass saying, hey, this is serious legal stuff, and they won't even acknowledge it.
Can I tell you something, Jim? I believe in my heart of hearts and evidence, I have mountains of evidence to prove it, that the Mossad was involved in the knocking down of those two buildings in New York. They had art students that were there. They had people working for moving companies with bomb residue inside their vans. They had people that were fired from the security staff 2 months earlier, replaced by these Israelis to help load up those buildings with detonation devices. And we had insider trading. We had Marvin Bush working as the head of security. Look, what we've got here is a criminal organization running our nation through APEC, JDL, ADL, the media. And I, for one, am not standing for it anymore, Commander. I'm just one man out here screaming and hollering. But you know something? We've got to take our country back, sir.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, when we come back, I want to give you an opportunity to talk to the listeners and maybe give them your last piece of information for this broadcast. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, more French Connection.
Good night, sweet.
Copies of the preceding broadcast are available at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back after the break. This is our last short segment here with my guest, Lieutenant Commander Jim Innes. Commander, I want to give you an opportunity to maybe address the listeners here today, your fellow Americans and people from around the world that are listening, and give you out your website where they can get additional information and maybe some of your thoughts before we close the show out, sir. Commander?
The whole story of this can be found online at usisliberty.org, and we also have a related website with which I'm also associated called usisliberty.inquiry.com.
Mm-hmm.
There's a discussion forum in usisliberty.inquiry.com where you can exchange your views on this with survivors and others who are interested in the subject. And on the website, you can read the entire, and download, if you wish, the entire war crime report. What is needed is for more people to write to their congressmen and ask them, what's the story with the war crime report? Why have we not had a response to it? Why is it not being investigated as required by law and has been done with every other maritime incident in the history of the United States?
Well, I've got a suggestion. I want them to write to their congressman and ask why we haven't declared war against Israel.
Hmm.
How's
well,
that
we
one,
know
Commander?
Why.
How's that one, Commander?
Yeah.
How's that one?
That's,
sound about right?
Well, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, you know something, ladies and gentlemen?
There's so much committed to Israel's welfare, no matter what, that I don't think there's anything anybody can say that would influence most of Congress.
Well, that's ending. That's ending. It's coming to an end now.
Mm-hmm.
And ladies and gentlemen that are listening to this and people across the country are finally realizing who's behind all these crimes in our world, and we are finally starting to wake up from our long slumber and find out who the criminals really are. And they've been identified, and it's time for us, this commander, myself, and people across the nation, patriots alike, to start standing up for the nation that gave us our lives and what we're going to leave to our children. How do you feel about that one, Commander?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people behind this fight with us, and I got to tell you, sir, I'm proud to have done this interview with you. I will be in touch with you, sir. I hope we can become closer over time, and it was a real pleasure to have you on my show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and we need to stay in close touch.
We sure will, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, Lieutenant Commander Jim Innes, USS Liberty, God bless you, sir, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Darryl. Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, guys, this whole fight that we're in right now is for the future of the world. It's not just for the future of the country. This situation that we're facing right now with the banking structure and with the criminality in Washington, D.C., and with the lies that have been told about wars and Iraq and the murder of those 3,000 people in New York and the killing of those people in London and all of these events that have gone on and on and on, infinitum, the Levon affair, the Gladio stuff. We're talking about over and over and over and over again. When is enough enough? It's not the New World Order, ladies and gentlemen. Wake up. It isn't the New World Order. Smell the coffee. Ladies and gentlemen, Darryl Bradford Smith signing off for today. We'll be back tomorrow with another great guest to fight the bad guy, Zionist. Stick with me.